Eureka by John Thomas, Volume 1. Chapter 3, Section 2, Part 3. The Hour of Trial. But while they of the synagogue of the Satan were to be subjected to great calamity in all the Roman habitable, the star angel and ecclesia of Philadelphia, contemporary with the Apostle John, together with all the ecclesias who kept the word of the patient waiting for Christ, were to be preserved from it. The words of the Spirit to the ecclesias are, "Seeing that thou hast kept the word of the patient waiting for me, I also will keep thee from the hour of the trial, being about to come upon the whole habitable, to make proof of them who dwell upon the earth." This hour of trial was not to arrive in the lifetime of that generation of saints. It was an hour being about to come, that is, in their future, or, as the event proved, in AD 248. About 150 years after the apocalypse was revealed. This afforded time for the Satanists to fill up the measure of their iniquity, and for the faithful to depart to their graves in peace. For a long peace of 37 years preceded the outbreak of the fiery trial under the Emperor Decius. During this tranquility, historians testify that a deep declension from Christian purity had taken place, not only in the East, where false philosophy aided its progress, but also in the West, where the operation of no peculiar cause can be traced beyond the common influence of prosperity on human depravity. This is completely evident from Cyprian's account, and it deserves to be remarked that the first grand and general declension after the primary effusion of the Divine Spirit should be fixed about the middle of the 3rd century. Milner, Ecclesiastical History, page 165. As we have said, 150 years had elapsed from the writing of this epistle to the Philadelphians to the beginning of this judgment upon the house of God. For the ecclesias in general, or collectively, were still his habitation through the Spirit, inasmuch as he had not then as yet spewed the delinquents out of his mouth. During this period of a century and a half, the state of things exhibited in the New Testament grew worse and worse. And it may be generally remarked that the same opposition to the name of the Spirit, termed by historians the deity of Christ or his manhood, and the same insidious methods of deprecating or abusing the word of the kingdom, or the word of the patient waiting for Christ, continued in all this period, which had begun in the time of the apostles, with this difference, that they were now multiplied, varied, complicated, and refined by endless subtleties and fancies, in which the poverty of taste and genius, so common in a period when letters are declining, discovers itself no less than the Christian doctrine. Nevertheless, in the midst of this widespread and general corruption of faith and practice, the faithful still kept themselves separate and distinct, and preserved their garments from defilement. The elevation of Decius to supreme power was fatal to multitudes of professing Christians, who were unable to stand the trial of their principles, and in their fall proved themselves to be of the synagogue of the Satan, and not Jews, but liars. The enmity of Decius to his predecessor Philip, whom Eusebius styles a Christian, although a murderer and profligate, who had not obeyed the truth, conspired with his pagan prejudices to bring on the most dreadful persecution Christianity had yet experienced. The hour of the trial had arrived, and it was evident to its contemporaries that nothing less than the extermination of the Christian name was intended. The chronology, says Milner, is here remarkably embarrassed. He therefore conjectures that the period extended to AD 260. The persecution raged with astonishing fury, beyond the example of former persecutions, both in the East and West, or in the words of the Spirit, epi tes oikomenes holes, upon the whole habitable. In a treatise by Cyprian concerning the lapsed, there is an affecting account of the declension from Christianity, which had taken place before his conversion in AD 246, and which moved the deity to chastise the body. If the cause of our miseries, says he, be investigated, the cure of the wound may be found. The Lord would have his family to be tried. And because long peace had corrupted the discipline divinely revealed to us, the heavenly chastisement hath raised up our faith, which had lain almost dormant. And when by our sins we had deserved to suffer still more, the merciful Lord so moderated all things that the whole scene rather deserves the name of a trial than a persecution. A peirasmos rather than a thlipsis. A distinction which obtains in Revelation 2 verse 10 and chapter 3 verse 10. Cyprian then proceeds to narrate the manifest cause of this trial that was to try, or put the professions of the Christians of previous peaceable and prosperous times to the proof. Each, says he, had been bent on improving his patrimony, and had forgotten what believers had done under the apostles, and what they ought always to do. They were brooding over the arts of amassing wealth. The pastors and their deacons each forgot their duty. Works of mercy were neglected, and discipline was at the lowest ebb. Luxury and effeminacy prevailed. Meretricious arts in dress were cultivated. Fraud and deceit were practiced among brethren. Christians could unite themselves in matrimony with unbelievers, and could swear not only without reverence, but even without veracity. With haughty asperity, they despised their ecclesiastical superiors. They railed against each other with outrageous acrimony, and conducted quarrels with determined malice. Even many bishops